today we're gonna buzz through a bunch of them because we just want to see. But in a way, they're similar. There's definitely a theme that brings them all together. So start with number 49, the laws of fines, penalties. So so these what we're going to look at is a bunch of civil, you're the lawyer, so please feel free to pipe in at any time.
Yeah.
Because I did not review these with my husband, so but basically these are all civil transgressions and penalties and the law of how to deal with them, the laws of how to deal with them. So here we have laws of fines. So just as a preface, we don't have prison as a punishment in Judaism. Doesn't exist. There's no imprisonment. The closest thing we have to prison is the cities of refuge, right? For somebody who kills by mistake, they can go to a city of refuge and live out the life of the Kohen Gadol. They live there until the Kohen Gadol dies, and then they're released. But that protects them from blood avengers because a relative, a blood relative of the person who was killed accidentally is permitted to kill the killer. So it protects them from that. So it's not actually prison. I guess you could be,
you could hide if you,
you can. You can have a regular
you're
life.
Isolated, probably, mm-hmm. pretty much. And you can't go back to your home, which
right.
is
you have to make a new home, right. So there's that. And then there is being sold into slavery. We have that, too. If somebody steals enough money or borrows enough money that they can't repay, so their last asset is their ability to work, and they can sell that. So in a way, those are two types of imprisoning effects, but we don't have prison. So what we do is have is fines, basically.
So when did
monetary.
Prison start, I wonder?
It's a good question.
Not a Jewish thing. Well.
But we certainly have it in the Torah. I mean, Yosef was thrown into prison. But prison wasn't often used. Bless you. Wasn't often used. And even for Joseph, that was really just used. If you think about it, in the Joseph story, why was he sent to prison?
But it wasn't a Jewish prison.
He was assaulting Pharaoh's wife.
Right. He's assaulting the right hand man, the Pharaoh's wife.
But it wasn't a Jewish prison. It was Pharaoh's prison.
Right. Right. But think about it. If he really was, so it wasn't a Jewish prison. Okay. But it was. But we have it. Listed.
It's referenced.
If he really was trying to rape his master's wife, right. would he go to prison?
I was going
to
say they would have killed him.
No way. They would have killed him in a second. He went to prison because the wife was lying and everybody knew it, but you couldn't say she's lying. Right. They had to do something because she accused him, but they weren't going to kill him because he didn't do it. So he went to prison. So who knows? I don't know when prisons got started, but clearly we have examples of prisons in the Torah.
So
right.
Pharaoh knew his wife well enough to know that
she... Yeah, it wasn't Pharaoh's wife,
Potiphar's
wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure. It had to, because otherwise you'd kill him, you know?
Off with your head.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's
for
interesting
sure.
in the sense that, you know, it's pretty well established that the way we do, we in the Western society anyway, do prison doesn't work.
Right.
right? It's not rehabilitative. The recidivism
right.
rate is horrendous.
Right.
And... it doesn't seem to be a huge deterrent either. I mean, there's
right.
that concept of deterrence, and I don't know that I've never really observed a large, you know, that effect so much either. So
right.
it's an interesting
it's
thing.
It's interesting that it's actually not a deterrent in a community that we'd like to see deterrence.
There's sort
it's
of
considered
a,
cool.
Yeah, there's sort of a...
It's a rite of passage.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is.
Like having some
young black
time.
Guys. And
oh, yeah, yeah. Going to jail, it's a thing.
Get your jail tattoo.
Mm-hmm. It's a thing that you do, and that's... what, I didn't even realize this, but, you know, the whole having your short show above your pants, you know, or having the long baggy pants.
It's a prison thing.
It's a prison thing because
oh, really?
No belts.
Oh. Hmm.
Right?
Hmm. Never thought about that.
So that whole style wow. comes from prison culture.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. No, ashamed. It's a style. That's the point. It's a it's a proactive style. They sell
yeah,
clothes.
Sort of a-
to
oh,
make
totally.
It look like that. I mean, it's a pro. It's not ashamed.
Oh,
yeah.
it's not quite the opposite. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
See these kids. In
yeah,
the
I got a birthday card. I got a birthday card from my son that had two like high school kids in the hallway. Had two kids looking at another kid saying, "Dude, your underwear is not showing."
That would be from one's kids. Yeah.
right. So yeah,
can't pull up your pants.
I know. But yeah, no, you can't tell them that because. Okay, but meanwhile, so without prison, what do we have? We have fines. A fine in Hebrew is called a kanas. And that is a word that you could just know in case you meet anybody in the yeshiva culture, because still today, boys in yeshiva get knast. So that's a mixture of Hebrew and English together. I got knast by the Rebbe. I didn't get up on time, I got knast. Yeah. So fined.
Monetarily fined?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, you don't get up in time for shachar, so you get knast. You're late to class, you're knast.
Where do they have money? Parents have
to yeah, pay. That's the whole thing. Like, really, whose knas is it? Yeah, so.
Right, that's where exactly.
Right, so I recommend anybody that sends their kid to yeshiva to give them an account. Mm-hmm. Give them like $50 a month spending money. Then their knases can come out of there. And then you can make a deal with the kid that if they have money at the end of the month, you'll match it if they put it into savings or something like that. Uh-huh. So that there's an incentive to not get knast.
Yeah. Other than that, it's not their money.
Other than that, they come to their parents and say, I got knast, I need $5. Oh, really? So then the mom yells at them, so the Rebbe doesn't have to yell. The Rebbe can just knast, but...
Mom can't knast.
So, yeah. So I recommend giving kids enough money to get knast properly and have them feel the pain rather than you.
Gum. I really need a pack of gum.
Yeah, yeah. Take it out of your account, pal. Don't get canas so much. Right. Okay, so so if men quarrel, so here's the thing. If they do anything that they shouldn't have done, hit somebody, or even shame somebody, cause somebody pain, either physically or emotionally, we fine them the amount of money that exacts from them that amount of pain. Right? So this is actually different than the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth thing, which is monetarily resolved as well. We certainly don't take out somebody's eye if somebody else takes out an eye or a tooth. We don't knock out somebody's tooth, but we charge them the money that is the value of the thing that they lost. But here it's different. Here you're causing them pain, hopefully in the same amount of the pain that they caused that person. But you're causing them pain through money.
Interesting. So the concept would be a person who had more money would pay a larger fine for a similar infraction.
Right, right. And I see that as fair. I mean, think about parking violations downtown. If you're wealthy, so who cares about a $40 fine? You park where you want and you pay $40, you know? But if you're poor, so $40 is a lot of money. You're not parking there. You're going to be careful. Right?
Yeah. The guy drives his Rolls Royce in and he goes to see the banker and he says, just to the banker, you know, I'm going on a little trip and I need a loan, I need $1,000. And the banker says, you know, what do you need $1,000? Just a personal signature. I'll leave you my Rolls Royce. For 30 days, I'll leave you my Rolls Royce as collateral. The banker gives him $1,000. Comes back and he says, you know, he says to the banker, how much are you? He says, $1,026 for the interest. He says, great. He says, so the banker says, why did you do that? He says, where can you park in New York for $26?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I heard that joke before. That is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah,
you said it, I remember.
Yeah, so it's true. I think parking spaces my mother-in-law's building are about $650 a month for a parking space.
I know people that pay more to park in Manhattan than we pay for our mortgage.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you decide how much money is the same amount as pain as somebody losing an eye?
Well, so that's what the Beit Din's job is. Yeah. It's not your job, fortunately. That is the job of the Beit Din.
So this is done only in Israel?
I don't think so. It's only in Israel. Let's see.
Well, on the second page it says. Well, which?
The law. It's only in Israel if you're going to.
These cases are called judgments of fine.
Where do you see this? Where
first
are you?
Paragraph.
Oh, it says authorized. It's may be judged only by an ordained authorized Beit Din in the land of Israel.
Right, except for you can injuries that one man inflicts on the ox or on another. May be judged only by an ordained authorized Beit Din in the land of Israel. Yeah, but you can still judge. Where I read somewhere else, because I read all of these through, of course, that.
I see.
Certainly only capital things can be judged in Israel when the Beit HaMikdash is there and there's a Sanhedrin. But some of these also, so I guess some can only be judged in Israel, and some can be judged by an authorized Beit Din anywhere in the world at any time. So depending on what it was. And the way that that's enforced is by excommunication. So our excommunication is not really excommunication. We don't excommunicate. I mean, we have that word. But really, I guess that's literally what the word is, to take them out of the community. To excommunity-assize them, excommunicate, right? So you can't, there is no, you're not allowed to talk to the person. If they're in Chayrim, they don't get an aliyah, they can't shop in your store, you can't talk to them, you don't, You know, wave to them across the street. They're out. So there's community pressure on that person until they pay. So that's how we enforce it. There are certain things that we enforce by beating, but I don't think we do that by fines. There's probably more than this, but I know for sure that a get we enforce by beating. So,
really?
Yes.
You can beat an
animal. Yeah, so you can only give a get out of your own free will. It has to be out of your own free will. No forcing gets. So today in Israel, what they do is they imprison. They'll say, we'll put you in prison until you desire to grant the get. Now, some people are so hateful, they'd rather rot in prison than free their wife. So there are a few people who are in prison for decades, and they won't do it. They won't do it. But the traditional way of doing it, because we Jews don't have prison, right? The traditional way of doing it is beating the person until they say, I want to. So the idea here is...
Okay.
So people say, well, isn't that a force to get? Are you forcing them? And the idea is actually no. Actually, deep down inside, everybody really wants to do the right thing. It would just be external trappings that would confuse a person and cause them to do the wrong thing. So if you beat them enough, you'll shake loose that external stuff, and they'll be able to get to the core of their essence, which is, yes, I want to give it.
That
so that's how you do it.
It seems a little dubious to me, I have to say.
It may seem dubious, but it seemed to have worked.
And we should start doing it now.
It seems that we should. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, there were ways that worked. So, and I think that also provides a deterrence. You know, if you know that you're going to be clobbered, so you're not going to be as nasty to people. But if you know you can get away with it, so why not? And that is a principal theme in all of these, is what's the point of this? There has to be justice in the world. If there's no justice, if there's no system for exacting justice, for monitoring justice, for requiring people to behave in a certain way, people will do whatever they want. And whatever they want is unpleasant for everybody around them. So we can't have that. We have to have a system that imposes order on society so that we can live as a society.
It's one of the seven Noahide laws.
Right, so one of the seven Noahide laws is to establish courts of justice to enforce all these things. So, it's slightly different because this is saying, yes, we have to have a system of big dins to enforce all this, but the question is, why are these all separate mitzvahs? Why not just have a mitzvah of justice? But there's all these mitzvahs are individual mitzvahs of how do you handle each chunk of civil ideas.
Well, it seems to me that perhaps one reason why we might have all these little various things is that the concept as a whole is subject to a myriad of interpretations. And this gets more specific. It's probably not as specific even as the laws in this country are or other Western-type countries, but it gives enough specificity so that people have a guide about how to impose, shall we say, the rule of order or of law on the people.
Right. Well, if you think about it, there may be that specificity. I'm not familiar with the Talmud and later writings and all the, in effect, case law. Right? Isn't case law specific cases of how a principle is applied?
Yes.
This is the principles.
Right.
So it wouldn't be that specific. You're not going to say if he goes from the left hand of the field, blah, blah, blah. Although there are some specific things.
But I was going to say there were some specific things.
Yeah, so let's look here. Like, okay, so the court should judge damages. So let's look and see. So what we have to understand is this is the biblical law, so this is all broader principles. And then you'll see case law later on.
But it's certainly narrower than everybody should live according
absolutely.
To. That's
absolutely.
What I meant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
This doesn't go through.
Well, right. I mean, because from the beginning of time, we knew that you couldn't trust people just to do what's right. The golden rule doesn't work.
Right. Well, depending on which golden rule.
Either one.
Yeah, the do unto others golden rule doesn't work. But the unless you're required by somebody else. But the he who has the gold makes the rules golden rule. That one works.
I thought she was talking about that.
Right. Okay, so number 51. We're skipping 50 because we did that last week. 51, that a court should judge damages by domestic animals. So this is damages, right. The damages of the... Okay, this is the goring because there's another ox one, which we'll get to.
or a man or property.
Right. So if this is an ox, if your ox gores my ox, my kid, God forbid, or property, so the owner is liable for the damage that the ox causes. So now we're getting a principle that not. So let's just see the developing principles. So. So one is in punishment. So the first one, the fines. In punishment, we're not going to cause the same damage that they cause, but there does have to be retribution affected by human court, which we will exact through money. Right? So that was the first one. This one is that an owner is responsible for the behavior of their property, which we'll see also with fire, the same thing. The owner is responsible, that's number 56. The owner is responsible for the behavior of their fire. So that's not a live property, right? But it's property that can damage. So the owner is responsible for that, even if it was a mistake. So here we have two different types of oxes. We have a muad and a tam. A muad, one that has already damaged, and so you know this is a damaging type of ox. And a tam is one that hasn't yet damaged.
A dog that has bitten before.
Right. Right, so this would be the first time that you see it. And then the muad can be divided into two types also, one that is mean and one that is stupid. But they both have damaged before. So one that is mean, we'll see later, that one has to be, well, the next one, that one has to be killed. So let's look at number 52. So this is interesting because this is actually not about the civil damages. This is just a side effect in a way. So number 52, not to eat an ox sentenced to death by stoning. Right? So now an ox has damaged. An ox has killed a person, and so it has to die. And it's going to die by being stoned. It's been sentenced to death. But now somebody says, you know, there's not that much food in the village. We're all hungry. It's been sentenced, but why should we stone it? Let's shecht it. We won't give it to the owner, but we'll feed other people with it. Not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. Not allowed to eat that ox at all. Even if it wasn't killed by stoning, just sentenced to stoning, and you properly shecht it, you can't eat of it at all. And so let's look at the middle paragraph there.
Can I go back to 51 for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Would this apply, like, to parents of children?
Right, so that's an excellent question. We don't learn about parents of children from the oxen. We have, there's
Something
other
else.
Places, yeah, there's other places.
Really in the
so it would apply.
Well, I know it's in the Torah, but I just wondered
so
if you
would apply
I don't,
only to animals.
I think that it does apply only to animals, and I'm pretty sure, and I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that a parent is technically, legally, not liable for the damage that their child does.
Really? Even?
From the mensch point of view, they are. But right. From the Jewish legal point of view, I don't believe that they are.
Even a young child.
I wonder, not from a legal either.
Well, no, I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that...
Well,
and
so
that
if your child kills somebody, you're not going to be punished for it.
Right, so but at what point?
Yes, that's true. That's true. Even a very young child, that's true.
Right.
You think about instances of even a very young child doing something awful.
Right. So, and what about monetary damage?
But you can be, I think, held, even if you wouldn't be criminally responsible if a child committed some horrific act, think that civilly, they could
if they're
could
playing baseball in the field
well,
and they break your window,
depend,
do you have to pay?
For sure, you would have to pay.
If they steal a car and go through a neighbor's window
if they steal a car and go through a neighbor's house, do the parents have to pay?
Again, I think that it's probably factually based, depending upon if the parents knew, if the parents had control. I mean, I'm guessing that there are...
Right, there's so many different levels there.
From a civil point of view, if the parents knew their children were making bombs in the basement.
They did know?
No, they did. They claimed
they didn't, but there was evidence that...
That they should have known
something was going on.
But I think you're right. I think in general, except under unusual circumstances, parents are not even civilly liable.
Look at this the kid that supposedly was up in a balloon.
Oh, that was the parents.
But the parents.
No, that was the parents. But the parents did it.
But the parents did it.
That was the parents. That had nothing to do with the kid. The kid was a pawn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was the whole the parents' crime.
The parents went to jail, I know that.
As they well should have.
Yes, that was the parents' crime. Had nothing to do with the kid. Yeah,
I think that you would probably have to really prove some responsibility on the parents' part to hold them even civilly liable.
I think.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
For the acts of a child.
I think so. It is different.
I'm not sure, but I think.
Because here with an ox, you are in control. I mean, of course, you're not always controlled. They can break out.
But it's your job.
But it's your job to make a correct fence. And if built properly and tended to regularly, you will contain your ox. And it's through your negligence that they get out.
And it's domestic animals.
Right.
It's not wild
right.
animals.
Oh, because you don't own wild animals. You don't.
Wait
but
a minute,
people.
There was something here that I read that said. Hold it.
I think it would apply to if you would own. Let's say you had a farm of.
For sure.
Wild animals. You raise tigers. Mm-hmm. I think you'd be responsible if your tiger mauls somebody.
In some respect.
Or not. There's tiger farms now in China, apparently, because there's such a huge appetite for tiger parts. Yeah. There's only 20 wild tigers left in China. 20.
Wow.
At least they're doing something to...
No. The tiger farms are to produce parts to sell on the black market. So you can have tiger organs and tiger parts for...
Tiger soup.
Yeah, for aphrodisiacs and medicinal, folk medicinal things. Okay, so not to eat that. So here's the what we're supposed to learn from not eating that ox, paragraph 2 of 52. At the root of the precept lies the aim that we should realize in our thinking that whatever was the cause of a disaster or misfortune is to be scorned as something abhorrent to both God and humanity. Even if it acted unintentionally, such as an animal which is witless, and all the more certainly a deliberate perpetrator of an injury. As we reflect on this thought, it will influence us to be so very careful in all our deeds that no disaster or misfortune should ever issue from under our hands.
Check that fence.
So that's why I don't talk on cell phone anymore when I'm driving. Blee netter. But I'm working on that, to not talk on it at all. Because... It's not just that it compromises me, but you can't drive defensively. If everybody's more compromised on the road, you know, everybody is driving at subpar standards, and the accidents are much more likely to handle. In New York now, it's illegal to drive even with the hands free. So no conversations on the phone at all. So, yeah. I think
it's hard
state.
To enforce.
Very
hard
to enforce.
Really hard to enforce if you have a... I mean, if you have an earpiece... then there's at least a visual thing. But now with the cars, with all the Bluetooth and everything?
Right. How do you enforce? Right. But the way that you enforce is by saying insurance isn't going to cover you if you get into an accident with
and
it.
And we can establish that.
And we can figure that.
Yeah.
We can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you will be held more liable for a death than you would be if not, right? So
are they doing that?
I think so.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, I think so. But we should learn from that. The reason why that legislation was passed is because it is dangerous, and we do need to look at ourselves and say, how am I being responsible or irresponsible? So when you think about this, that you can't even eat from an ox that is killed by stoning, what this is saying is, as we reflect on this thought, it should influence us to be so very careful in our deeds that no disaster or misfortune should ever issue from under our hands. So the way that you're careful is by not doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on that.
That's commendable.
For my own self and set a good example for my kids because, I told them, you know, I've spent way too much energy getting them to be this age for them to blow it because they feel like texting while they're driving.
Mm.
You know, like, so you have to set a good example. Okay. Trying. Trying.
Pull over when your phone rings if you can.
I don't answer
just
it.
Ring.
Just don't answer it.
But if you can.
I have a kid answer it if I have a kid in the car. Mm-hmm. And then they can ask a question that way. Or they can just say, I'm driving. Or they can just check, you know, who it is and then just not answer it. Mm-hmm. So, and then try to answer when I get there. But
we used to not have cell phones.
Right. But now people do expect. You know, people say, oh, I've been trying to get you, trying to get you. You know what? If you're driving for an hour, I drove back from Boulder, and like, so you're just not available. And you just have to make it that way. And it's hard.
It is hard.
It's so tempting to be on. I mean, it cuts out. Totally. It cuts out hours of phone call ability.
Yeah.
You know, and requires you to do it at home or somewhere else. In Manhattan also, now they just passed laws against people. Oh, if you cross, you're not allowed to cross the street on the phone. Pedestrians are not allowed to be on the phone while they're crossing.
Really? How many times have you seen people step out into the street or whatever because they're on the phone and they're not paying attention?
Right, right. That's been causing accidents in Manhattan. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Good for Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's doing a pretty good job. Okay, the obligation of a court to judge damages by a pit. So if a pit exists, so now we've had, right, we've had people doing damage to another. We've had a person's ox doing damage to another. Now we have a pit, something that does not move, right? It has no free will, but still, and is on somebody's own property. And yet, we're still held liable for damages caused by a pit that we dig or that we own, even if we didn't dig it, that we didn't cover.
So I wonder if it also extends...
This extends to swimming pools, I think, also.
Well, I was going to say extends to other creation of other dangerous
I think it does. I think this is a principle.
It says here, pit, ditch, or cave. But
yes.
I would think that you could expand it to include creation of any other kind of a inherently dangerous physical thing on your land.
I think it does. So, so this is saying, even on your land, you can expect trespassers, even though they're not allowed to, and you are liable for the damage that will be caused on your property by you not properly tending to the protection of dangerous things. So, and then, so it's interesting because there's, let's see, the law of the cover of the pit also. So here in the note it says, for example, if he placed a cover on the pit that could bear the weight of oxen, but not of camels, then camels came and broke it in, after which oxen fell in.
Wow.
If the camels do not usually come there, he has no liability and is considered an accident.
Well, that's sort of that's
right. Like
that
you did right. So you did your due diligence. Right. You did your due diligence. You covered it properly with a cover that was strong enough to handle what you expect. But now there's a marauding troop of camels that plows through your property and breaks it, and then your neighbor's ox comes over, and the neighbor's ox dies in it. That was just an accident. It's not foreseeable. It's not your fault. So, but all those laws would be discussed in Bava Kamma and Bava Batra.
So the pit has to actually be covered, not just fenced off.
I think it probably could be fenced off, but it has to be made inaccessible somehow. So a fence or a pit or, I mean, a cover. And then there's laws. So it's just giving examples of where all the laws that will apply to it. So I'm not saying here what they are because we're doing much more of a general sweep.
Yeah,
but you should just
remove a source of damage or injury.
Right. You just have to understand that it's your job, even on your property, even when you have no trespassing signs up, to make sure that your property is safe for foreseeable problems.
Mm-hmm.
So you could put a fence around it. You don't have to cover a swimming pool. You could fence it off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that a swimming pool falls under this. It's an attractive nuisance. That's even worse. It's an attractive nuisance. Right, something that people
But then this is weird. It says, if someone digs a pit on his property, right next to the public domain, and does not leave his pit ownerless, which means that he must provide some barrier protection, and nothing, but then it says, and nothing whatever serves as a barrier between the pit and the public domain, he is free of liability. It says he has no liability even though it is not possible.
If he made the pit ownerless.
Himself. Well, I'm reading at the end of the paragraph on 223. I mean, it's just weird. It says, for the settlement of land cannot be achieved. I mean, it's talking about the fact that if you do something that you have to do in order to be able to inhabit your property.
Made the pit. Oh, wait. Is it, what?
Start with, so too, if someone digs a pit on his property right next to it, it's like about halfway down that paragraph.
Which paragraph?
So too, if someone digs a pit. Okay.
So too.
Its root purpose is the beginning of the paragraph. Well,
okay. So too, if someone digs a property.
Does not leave the pit ownerless.
Which means foundation for the walls. He has free reliability.
Does not leave his pit ownerless. That means he owns it, right? Because that's a double negative.
And nothing would ever serve.
Well,
this is saying, in the process of building a house.
House, right.
You don't, yeah, in the process of building.
You don't have to be, right.
Right. This is not a permanent, so this is not a permanent pit, this is a temporary pit, even though it's accessible, even though it's close to the public domain. Right.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, it's
you,
just an exception.
It is interesting. Yeah, you're right. It's interesting because it's saying you can't have settlement unless people build houses.
Right.
And you without foundation, so it is an exception to the rule.
I mean, it's just interesting.
It's interesting because today our law is you have to fence that off.
Right. Right.
Right.
Because I was a little kid, I went into the, I was warned, we were all warned that there was a...
Don't go in the construction
zone. Well, no, because there was one that had already collapsed, and my friend Steve next door to me, and I wanted to go see
how it collapsed. Let's go see it, let's go see
it. It was real muddy, and we got stuck. And we got really stuck. I mean, we got stuck so people had to come and get us, so we couldn't exactly
see.
We were in big trouble. The interesting thing is, my mom put me in a hot bath, and I could hear, because Steve's room was next to mine, and I could hear him getting a wallop. Different parenting.
Yeah.
Your mother knew I knew that I was already in trouble, so I didn't
do anymore. So, and this law...
While you're building a house.
Right, while you're building. And this law applies to men, but not to women, because women are not judges. So, because the law is about judging it. So the law applies to men. But women are included in, if they have the pit or uncover the pit or inadequately cover the pit, so they may have to pay damages. They're included in that part, but they're not included in the law of judging it. Okay, 54. That the court should impose proper payment on a thief, or he may incur death.
He who?
He the thief.
Oh, okay.
He, the thief, could incur death. So he could incur death if he breaks into a house while people are sleeping. Then he can incur death for that transgression. But for regular stealing, taking someone in and define stealing. Here, if a man steals, in substance it is stealing, theft, and a person takes something of value from his fellow, from his house, or from his purse. When the householder does not see and does not know, and so anything similar. So that's different than...
Robbery.
Robbery, which is taking it when they do see and they do know. Right, right. So pickpocketing is stealing, right? But holding them up at gunpoint is robbery, right?
I think so. And I think even in our system, there's a different level of crime.
Misdemeanor versus...
Right, I would think so, because one is a frustration that you've lost your stuff,
job.
And the other is...
Person is potentially
you could have a heart attack.
Right,
right,
danger.
Right, because you're there's the fear and there's the it's a whole different experience.
Is there something about if they break in during the at night, the owner has a right to shoot them, but if they break in during the day?
Well, actually, I think the law of being able to defend your property is not distinguished between day and night.
Well,
I think
it does in Torah, I think, doesn't it?
It may in Torah. That I don't know, but
I remember reading something.
Yeah, that I don't
know. I mean, it would make sense that people are more scared at night than they are in the day.
We have less ability to really ascertain what's going on. Cause
well,
you're,
yeah, but
right,
but
I think now that you say about the Torah aspect,
day,
right, but I think it has to do with the fact that a thief that steals at night has less Yiras Shemayim than a thief that steals during the day.
Oh, yeah.
Because by stealing by cover of night, you are saying, I am not as seen.
Right.
When God can see through dark, right? So then that means that your fear of man is greater than your fear of God if you steal at night. You steal during the day, so you could care less about. But there's something better about that than stealing at night, that you shouldn't have more fear for man than you do for God.
Interesting.
So that thief is on a lower level. A thief that steals at night is on a lower level. Yeah. You know about the Yichus thing. I probably told the show before about the thief who's the brother of a rabbi. So the rabbi's walking down the street, and he sees his brother down the street. So he crosses over. He doesn't want to be associated. He's like, oh, my brother. Crosses the street, so he shouldn't have to stop and greet him. So the brother is offended, the thief. And he yells across the street, says, you, whose brother is a thief? Crosses from me, whose brother is a rabbi. Yeah, so that's the importance of Yichus. Okay. All right, so now the obligation of the court to judge damages by a domestic animal's grazing or trampling. So this is damage by the tooth and damage by the foot, two different types of damage that an animal could cause. So this would not be intentional damage. This is just trampling or eating. It's not goring, right? This is what animals usually do. So so this is just the regular kind of damage. So we have to say who's in charge and who has to pay and how much has to be paid. That all has to be adjudicated. And it's the obligation of the court to determine those damages and to enforce them. And this law applies to men because they carry out justice and not women, again, except for if she owns the animal, then yes, she is liable to pay, but not liable to mete out the justice. That's for men only. 56, the obligation of the court to judge damage by fire. So now we talked about something inanimate on your property that doesn't move off your property, right? A pit. We talked about animals who damage by the natural way they eat and walk, and animals who damage by goring, whether on purpose or by mistake, and human beings that inflict damage. But now this is fire. So fire is inanimate except for it does move, and it's our responsibility to maintain control over it. So we are liable for damage of a fire that breaks out because of us. Right, so you set the fire onto his stacked grain, and it burned anything else of his, as it is written. So if any damage that's caused by that, because the verse says, if fire breaks out. The sense of breaking out implies that even if it broke out or spread by itself, and so it comes to serve notice that even if a person kindled a fire within his own property, and it spread by itself and caused damage, he's required to pay, because he did not watch his flame. For a man is duty-bound to watch his fire that it should not spread and do damage, since it is the way of fire to travel by itself, even though it's not a living creature.
So you have to have set it initially, though.
You have to have set it initially.
Well, or wonder if it just is from your...
From your electrical system or your stove.
Yeah, I wonder if you didn't set the fire intentionally, but you're responsible for what created it.
Well, so we have electrical systems. What else would there be?
Well, for example, but maybe
lightning?
This is covered.
Lightning.
No.
Well, lightning wouldn't
not
be.
You.
But yeah, what I was going to say is, let's say you have a fire in your hearth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like you set a fire outside to burn brush or whatever.
Fire in your hearth, and that gets out of control, and your house burns down.
So that would.
I don't think
so.
There is spontaneous combustion.
You wouldn't be liable for that either.
So you think you would not be if it was in your hearth, if you were.
I don't think so, because it's not. It's not you. You care about your house. You've taken proper precautions to protect fire from spreading to your house and causing that damage.
Right.
Once it's gotten out of that control so that your house is burning down and it's spreading to others, I doubt it. I think this is when you're burning a field, you're burning your hay, because that's what it says specifically in the beginning.
Right.
You've set a flame to stacked grain.
Right.
Right, or burn anything else. You want to back burn a field or something like that. You're burning garbage.
Right.
Something outside where it's your job to contain it.
And to watch it.
You've
it's
already.
The way of fire
right.
To
the
travel.
Way. Because it is the way of fire to travel.
But not,
but not from your hearth.
Yeah,
it's not.
Not meant to travel.
You've designed a hearth to protect fire so that you can contain it in your home. So that's a breakdown of foreseeable.
Gotcha.
I mean, that could happen. We know that it happens.
Right.
But in general, we design our homes and hearths so that fire can be contained within them and not spread. So, but here's something interesting, so let's just keep reading from this one. The root reason is known, as we have stated in number 49, which is that there has to be justice, otherwise you can't have civilization. As to its laws, for instance, the distance that a fire is to be kept away from the boundary of one's property, which is according to the height of the blaze, so depending on how big the blaze is, that's how far away from the boundary it has to be kept. The law for a person who sends a flame by the hand of a deaf mute, a witless fool, or a child, or with a normal intelligent person. So we have three in one category and one in another category, right? It looks like the hand of the deaf mute, the witless fool, and the child are all people who don't have the same amount of das as a normal intelligent person. And so sending a flame, a torch, you know, to somebody else's property in their hand, you would be liable for that if they stopped to play on the way, or they didn't really understand that fire is hot and they set it down for whatever, you know, that would be your fault because you chose the wrong messenger. So for me, it was just interesting to see that a deaf mute is in the same category as a witless fool or a child.
Well, I think at the time that this was written, there was, you know, the belief quite likely that a person who was deaf mute lacked basic intelligence skills.
Right.
Which we now know is not necessarily true at all. But at this time, because they couldn't communicate,
I think there would be
that.
But I think there also would be that they do lack, even if they have the right mechanics for intelligence, let's say, innate intelligence inside their brain, it's not just that they can't communicate it out, but they can't absorb as much in.
Yeah, you can't say, now, don't put this down.
And there wasn't sign language.
They can't be aware of anything that's about to happen around.
Right. Right.
It's about to happen around them. That they could, you know, react
right,
to.
That's true, too.
Right.
That's a separate point.
Because right. Who wrote these laws? Torah is timeless.
Yeah. No, that's a separate point. No, you're right. So I'm not saying that, so there is a belief. Yeah, correct. But I think also the person does absorb less. I mean, I just see it with experience that I have with somebody who is not fully deaf but hearing impaired. They can't absorb as much, and so they don't process as much. They just don't. So there is less, even if there's innate intelligence, there's not enough material to process, and so the intelligence isn't as exercised.
Right.
So there's sense. That. And then you're right, they don't, we have two deaf people on our block, and sometimes I wave to one of them on her way to work, but
and she doesn't really.
Her vision's impaired a little bit too, so she doesn't see at all. So she, I mean, unless I'm standing right in front and I wave. So, right, she would not be aware of anything happening around her.
It could alert you to blow out the
flame. Right.
Nothing.
Exactly.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. If there was a troop of kids behind her, if there was a vicious right. dog, if there was a truck careening out of control, like she wouldn't
anything.
Know.
Right.
She wouldn't
right.
know.
Yeah.
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 So.
That's a good point.
Right. So I guess it's not about intelligence, these three things, because a child certainly
awareness.
Could be very intelligent,
awareness.
But it would be an ultimate ability to react and protect the flame. Right. So a child, because of flightiness,
maturity.
ADD, immaturity wouldn't
right.
be able to protect the flame. Of course, a simple person, and then deaf mute also, probably because of the ability to react,
right.
you know, to perceive and react.
The environment around you.
Right.
And
awareness.
And right.
What's,
right.
Yeah,
that's
a good point.
Mm-hmm. Good. Right. What about the flame? So all these different aspects would be found in Baba Kama. So the law of several people. What if several people let the fire? Then who's liable? Mm-hmm. So that's all. This is, you know, one gathers the wood, one lights the flame, but it's on another person's property. Who's liable if it gets out of control? All that stuff. All right. Here's an interesting one.
The Hanukkah candle. I thought that was
the case of the camel that passes by laden with flax. So it's in the market, and its back is full of flax, and it catches fire from the lamp of a shopkeeper. What is the law if it catches fire from a Hanukkah candle? These and other details are explained in the second and sixth chapters of the Talmud tractate Baba Kama. I think this is one of the places where Hanukkah candles are mentioned in the Talmud. I don't think it's discussed that much, but this is one of the classic cases where it is.
What's really interesting is if you go back to think about why this book was written. You know, this is written from a father to a 13-year-old who then says, by the way, if you want more information, here's where you
right,
go.
Right, exactly.
It.
And that's in every place. That's what
yeah,
it's for.
That's what's, I mean, when I see that, I go.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it is for. It's just to give you a little taste.
Yeah but to tell
and
him.
And again, this book is written what?
A father of a bar mitzvah boy.
Okay.
That's what
his father. To his son.
This is a bar mitzvah gift of a father to his son.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And
so
he writes all of these, what you find in every parsha. Mm-hmm. And then he also says, now if you want more information, kid, here's where you find it.
Hopefully.
So he was hoping not only was it a gift for his son, but he says in the introduction that he's hoping that this will take up the Sabbath afternoons. It will, the boys go out and play in the streets. Better they should have something they could study together that makes it accessible, that makes it fun, where they could look up the mitzvahs of the parsha and where to find additional information if they want to find it.
Did you say it's out of print?
No, this is not out of print.
Not out of print. It's the other one.
This is here. Right, that's out of print. This is here.
Series.
Yeah.
You get
yeah.
Volume.
Yeah.
And we're halfway through the first one.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Always another set of books.
Oh, yeah. Right.
$100, wait till December.
Always.
Right. What about a fire caused by the deep hot hummus when you were searching? Some people used to use fires.
Yeah.
Used to use a candle.
Sure, a flame, right?
Right.
And a feather.
Right. So usually those fires didn't get out of control enough to burn down somebody else's property.
Just your own.
Just your own. So, we are taught today to not use that little Hanukkah candle that comes in the mail. You're supposed to use a flashlight because fires are dangerous. They should send flashlights in the mail instead of the candle, the spoon, and the feather. Yeah, it was pretty funny what the comedian was talking about. I don't know if you guys were there.
I'm so sorry.
Motzei Shabbos.
I was all ready to go.
He did Alt Pesach shtick, and yeah, looking for the what it sounds like when you're instructed to do that the first time. Kosher your house, and now that it's kosher, nullify it. What do you mean nullify it? I could have nullified it before I left. And now that you nullify, this is the wrong order, actually. Now take 10 pieces of chametz and replace them around your house, and then go look for them. And then how... It was funny. And then how you always can't find at least one of them. You placed them, and you're looking for it 10 minutes later.
It's
but
a dog,
yeah. Okay, 57. Oh, quick. So this is the court should judge cases involving unpaid custodians. So if somebody leaves something in your possession, let's say you're in the airport and somebody says, can you watch my luggage for me while I run to the bathroom? You are an unpaid custodian. You're not getting anything for that. But you're there with your toddler, right?
That's a no-no.
And your toddler runs off.
You're not allowed to do that.
Right, but let's say you feel like you can trust them, right?
Yeah.
For whatever reason. You're there. It's another mom with a toddler, right? So you totally understand. You're both there with toddler. She doesn't want to slip her stuff and her toddler. She needs to go change him in the bathroom. She goes, change you, watching it. You're an unpaid custodian. Meanwhile, your toddler runs off. You run off, chase the toddler, come back, and their suitcase is gone, stolen. Are you liable for the theft? Because it was under your jurisdiction. You were supposed to take care of it. So the answer is no. An unpaid custodian is not liable for the theft of the property under their care. A paid custodian would be, but not an unpaid custodian. And then there's all kinds of laws about that.
The whole thing on this Rabbi.
And let's just do 58, this last one, so that we can finish up. This is nice and long, several pages long. But basically, the court's obligation to judge the case of a plaintiff and a defendant. So that's very broad. But this just talks about all the types of different things, and it's probably not all of them, but quite a few of the different types of things. If people stole, if people took a loan, if there's a disagreement about the loan, I lent you 100, no, you didn't, you lent me 50. Yes, you lent me 100, but I paid back 50 already. He says, no, you didn't pay back 50.
Right.
You know, all those different scenarios where it could be all kinds. So do you have to swear to it? Do you not have to swear to it in different amounts? What if you find money and return it to the person, but the person says, actually, I lost 100, but you're only returning to me 50. Are you liable for the other 50 if you found it? Did you steal 50 and return 50? Who do we trust? Who don't we trust? All that kind of stuff. That's all. This is a long whole thing about all of that. But the main thing is that the court is required to adjudicate those matters. So we do need to have a court, and we do need to have law to adjudicate all those types of different scenarios. We have to have courts set up to adjudicate matters between
and you can't just say this is too complicated, I'm not
going to
bother with it.
No. We can. We individuals.
But the court cannot.
No. Of course not.
I mean, some of them could be darn complicated.
Yes, and it's the court's job to detangle it. That's their life position. The judge's job is to detangle all those factors and figure out who's right and who's wrong. And there is a siyata deshmaya. There's a heavenly assistance that goes for judges. Judges in American courts, too. You know, that there is, because it is a divine exercise to mete out justice, because justice is a divine principle in the world, those who are truly trying to mete out justice have heavenly assistance, like doctors do. You know, it's not all their hands. A patient that's supposed to live, so the doctor will have bracha during the surgery. And a patient that's not supposed to, so it could be, it might be through the hands of the doctor. And it might not. That's why we still sue, and I'm not going into all this. We still sue, but maybe it wasn't the doctor's fault. Maybe it was just that patient's supposed to die, and so it came through the hands of the doctor. You'd rather it not come through your hands, right? So you want to take whatever measures you can to prevent being somebody who has a low enough status that klala has to come through you, right?
And the last sentence of this is good. It says, this is one of the precepts which all mankind generally was commanded to observe, mm-hmm. because the settlement of the world cannot do without it.
Right.
Civilization cannot do what they need.
Right, yeah. We have to have courts of law.
Because we're not good by ourselves.
Right, and I'll tell you something interesting that I observed just in my when my daughter went to Mexico. So in Mexico City, there's not that much law going on over there. There may be some laws on the books. So when she went to visit her friend, her friend taught her, and it was true, that girls, women, females, cannot go out alone. They must be accompanied by a male, even if it's a little brother, a 10-year-old brother.
Anywhere?
You cannot. No, it's not safe.
It's not safe.
You cannot go out alone. So I was thinking about...
In broad daylight?
In broad daylight.
Wow.
So I was thinking about the parallels between Saudi Arabia and Mexico City. You know, Saudi Arabia, it's legislated that you can't go out alone. But in Mexico City, you can't go out alone. So one is from laws, and one is from not enough laws, right?
Wow.
But the reality is the same. A woman alone is not safe. So I thought it's
now,
fascinating
even
to see.
With another woman.
No, even with another, no.
Saudi Arabia, definitely
no. No, so Saudi Arabia not, but not Mexico either, no.
Because it's just not safe.
Not safe, not safe. Nope, you have to go with somebody.
It's a male.
They have compounds. And right, because it's a whole machismo in the society, so a male is a protector, even if they're a kid.
Yeah, you turn your back on
it's the male energy. Yeah.
Mexico,
oh, totally. She said she was getting married. She went to the mall with three of her friends. So she parked in the underground garage of the mall, went into the mall with her friends. That's safe. Came back to the mall with their purchases, was held up at gunpoint, gave all their purchases over to the gun guy, and drove home. But it wasn't a total freak out, because that happens. You know, so like you'd rather it not. It's like, in a way, it must be the same kind of feeling as being pulled over by a cop. Like, it's not that it never happens. You do get adrenaline. You'd rather it not happen, but it doesn't ruin everything. Like, it happens. You get held up at gunpoint. It happens. You go to the mall. Like, really? So, right, so that is why we need courts of justice and systems of enforcing it, is that society will disappear without law to maintain it.
Right. All the Jews live in compounds.